Now, the one who protects us all from prattling prognosticators and perfidious pundits.
I say, America, stay out the bushes.
Look for the Union Naval.
And to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the government.
From my cold, dead hands.
I'm concerned that if we don't impeach this president, he will get reelected.
It's time for the Alan Nathan Show. Here he is, the longest-running nationally syndicated centrist host in the country, Alan Nathan.
Welcome aboard, everybody. Welcome aboard. I'm ever yours, Alan Nathan, the militant moderate. Once again, this is the Oasis for those who have an aversion to the left, right, black, white, two-dimensional approach. Absolutely delighted you could be with us. If this is your virgin voyage, allow me to share with you our mantra. Folks, we want the Republicans out of our bedroom, the Democrats out of our wallets, and both out of our First and Second Amendment rights. We feel there exists this cavernous gap separating the two orthodoxies, and that it's a gap comprised of many degree-thinking people who can argue quite passionately in shades of gray. And to that end, each and every show, we have fine guests to help best illustrate this point. Today is no exception. Also, if you wish to hook up with us on the web, it's www.alannathan.com. Don't forget that email address, alan@alannathan.com. That's A-L-A-N. Coming at you live and strong each and every Monday through Friday. At this time, don't forget the classic Alan Nathan Show, Saturday, 6 to 7 p.m. And overnight Sunday mornings, 3 to 4, all times Eastern. We are indeed a Main Street Radio Network production. Please check us out at mainstreetradionetwork.com. Feel free to avail yourselves of our nascent but always robust Twitter and Facebook options that we have there for you. And, of course, with great dispatch and alacrity, we love to thank our distributor, the Salem Radio Network. That's right. The Alan Nathan Show's entering its 27th year of national syndication, all thanks to you. Reaching about 800 towns and cities across a couple of hundred radio station broadcasts each week. Again, all thanks to you. And by the way, I don't care if you're part of the authoritarian left or perpetually clueless right. Please get out of the thought control business. And without further ado, we have before us a plethora of challenges as per the norm. Democrats bellow that Trump has pretty much put the country going in the wrong direction, even as their own 25% approval rating proves they're as lost as Biden was in that rainforest. Shouldn't they perhaps get a compass before demanding that we follow them? Just a thought. Also, the latest Rasmussen poll numbers show the voters' universal disdain for legacy media is choking left-wing bias. Can the press relearn objective reporting? Also, the Supreme Court's, well, they got a schedule not to be believed. First of all, they're going to be reviewing the practice of district judges issuing nationwide injunctions beyond their own jurisdictions, along with a plethora of other things. But you got to wonder, will Trump use his constitutional check if the judiciary, in the aggregate, tries to usurp the executive's separated powers in the faux name of exercising its own? Because with 677 some odd individual district judges each believing that they can throw a wrench in the executive's agenda with these nationwide injunctions, essentially bestowing upon themselves more power than the one chosen by the electorate to head up one of the three branches of government, then we're in a lot of trouble. And the president does have an ability to stop this. These nationwide injunctions cannot be tolerated any longer. And I've discussed this before, okay? There could be debate over the advisability of when the president should use his check against the entire judiciary or even just an individual court. A lot of discretion should be applied. But one thing cannot be debated is that it's never unconstitutional for the president to use his check. And no matter how many times they scream and yell about, oh, rule of law, behave and respect the rule of law. No. The president is never violating the Constitution by utilizing one of the constitutionally provided tools made available to him in the event that the judiciary tries to overreach, whether by individual court ruling or in mass, even if it's in the entire aggregate, including the Supreme Court. Okay, we have to understand something. We can have debate over the advisability of when to use this presidential prerogative, but we can never claim that it doesn't exist. It has a codified existence in our founding document. You see, every president has the unassailable, although sometimes perilous, constitutional option to use the functionality and mechanics of his branch's separated powers for the purpose of leveraging his check against what he believes to be the hypothetical unconstitutional encroachment upon those powers by really any component of the judiciary, whether it's an individual district court, an appellate court, or even the Supreme Court. And he can do so even as the dispute in focus, let's say, makes its way through the appellate process. And folks, the reason why this matters is because it's especially relevant to, let's say, time-sensitive issues, when even an eventually favorable decision for the president would be considered moot because of a lower court's flawed ruling having caused irrevocable damage. In other words, he can really ignore any federal judge's usurpation of his branch's prerogatives by taking advantage of the court's inability to enforce it. That's what you have to remember. The judiciary is at the mercy of the executive carrying out its orders. And the reason for that is because we want it to be protected against a potentially rogue court or aggregate judiciary. This matters. All right, so he can really ignore any federal judge's usurpation of his branch's prerogatives by taking advantage of the court's inability to enforce it. Now, this is a limitation deliberately designed by the authors of our Constitution. And it was for the purpose to ensure that no part of the judiciary could ever, let's say, morph into a tyrannical tree of any kind. And contrary to popular understanding, the judiciary is never the final arbiter over whether or not it has usurped another branch's separated powers. It doesn't go like that. I mean, think about it. If that were not the case, the Supreme Court of the judiciary en masse could potentially rule that it has the actionable authority to oversee the military's operations instead of the president, or perhaps initiate legislation instead of Congress. Baron Montesquieu provided that failsafe. He warned about this risk when the guy was thinking up the separation of powers principle upon which our founding fathers had, let's say, well, let's be honest, predicated America's own three branches of government. This matters. So he can stop them. Now, again, really, a president's not a king. All right, so he also faces a check against becoming, let's say, a tyrannical entity as well. Let's say, you know, he was interfering with proper judicial review in the name of protecting his separated powers. There's a check on the guy. He's a king. But that doesn't mean he still can't use that check. But again, he's not a dictator. So citizens can, through their Congress, either find that a president is right about a judge's rogue conduct and let his rejection pass with no House impeachment, no Senate expulsion trial, or the House can find that, you know what, you are the rogue actor, dude, and they can go ahead and impeach him and send the case to the Senate for a trial. But if it fails to reach the two-thirds vote required to trigger that expulsion or to stop the president, well, then the president will have won the constitutional argument in focus, and he will have prevailed as per the highest legal process in the land. And his repulsion of that alleged judicial overreach shall stand. It doesn't matter about the sophistic objections of lawyers and judges that may wish to spew over its supposed immorality. Guess what, dudes and dudettes? The check exists nonetheless. Which kind of makes sense. Just as no person can be a judge in his own trial, nor can the judiciary be the final adjudicator when its own branch happens to be one of the two litigants regarding a separation of powers dispute. You got to remember, each branch has certain absolute powers beyond the reach of the other two. And this is to ensure that each may leverage against the other or others the checks and balances and reciprocal checks and balances required to maintain and protect their respective allocated authorities. So, yeah, the Supreme Court has final ruling over the constitutionality of a given argument, fine. But when assessing whether it has possibly encroached upon another branch's authorities, well, it provably does not have the final say. Otherwise, this solution to the quandary would be absent, but it exists, doesn't it? Yes, it does. Most assuredly it exists. And thank God it does. You know, in Marbury versus Madison in 1803, the Supreme Court rightly clarified its branch's authority for judicial review. In other words, its power to interpret when a conflict is judicially reviewable and whether challenged laws pass constitutional muster. Fine. But the right to interpret the Constitution has never been a license to unilaterally amend it. That's an Article 5 function. And only a constitutional amendment could allow a court to absorb another branch's allocated authorities. So, yeah, judicial review makes sense because there are plenty of times when the Constitution simply doesn't have the corresponding language to deal with a particular challenge and focus. So we accept their approach. But when the Constitution does provide direct wording and our judiciary disregards its instructions on point, that's when we've got a problem.
It's no secret that everyone wants to live a healthier life, but how many of us really do what it takes to make that happen? A new book lays out easy steps you can take to bring you closer to that goal. Dr. Brian Clement is the author of Quantum Human, an easy-to-read guide to wellness that provides a historic and scientifically validated roadmap on how to stop aging, prevent disease, and getting the most out of life.
Our many years of research have led us to realize how important it is to pay attention to our foods, our thoughts, and the activities we participate in. And more important is our relationships and sense of community.
Dr. Clement's message is one of empowerment. He says that each of us can harness energy and raise our biofrequency through conscious actions. And by doing so, we can heal ourselves and contribute to a more harmonious and connected world.
It's no mystery in Quantum Human we have explored the science of energy healing and the human potential and show how everyone can improve their lives and take their health back.
For more information, visit BrianClementPhD.com.
It's been 5 years since the COVID-19 pandemic began, yet nurses continue to face significant stress and burnout. Brendan Martin, Research Director for the National Council of State Boards of Nursing, or NCSBN, has more.
The nursing community is facing persistent challenges, with nurses continuing to leave the field in record numbers. In fact, our 2024 National Nursing Workforce Study finds nearly 2 in 5 nurses plan to leave the profession by 2029.
More than 138,000 nurses left the profession since 2022, and a lot more nurses intend to leave the field within the next 5 years. Nurses face similar challenges across all levels and experience.
40% of nurses expressed that stress and burnout are among the top reasons for considering a job change. They also mentioned heavy workloads, understaffing, and feeling underpaid contributed to their desire to leave.
For more information on the National Council of State Boards of Nursing 2024 Workforce Study, visit ncsbn.org/workforce.
What I know about courage, I learned from my adoptive mom. She said sometimes you just gotta hold on and know we'll get through this.
Mom, we are so high up. Hold my hand.
No, you hold my hand.
Here we go.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care. You can't imagine the reward. Visit AdoptUSKids.org to find out more.
I learned patience from my adoptive dad. All he had to say was,
"Hey, you got this. Just breathe." Hey, we're pretty good.
Yeah.
Might have to start a band.
I got it.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care. You can't imagine the reward. Visit AdoptUSKids.org to find out more. This message is brought to you by AdoptUS Kids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
The mission of Paralyzed Veterans of America is clear. Accessibility. Veterans who have served and sacrificed the best of themselves deserve access to the best our country has to offer. Access to meaningful employment. Access to the veterans' benefits they've earned. Accessible homes and vehicles. And access to every part of their communities. With PVA staff working inside VA hospitals, no other veterans organization has provided more real-time, ongoing support for paralyzed veterans and their families. PVA is proud to serve veterans across all branches, all generations, and all conflicts. Our nation's heroes fought for your independence. Join PVA in fighting for theirs at pva.org.
Welcome back, everybody. Welcome back. Every year is Alan Nathan, the militant moderate. Once again, this is The Oasis for those who have an aversion to the left-right, black-white, two-dimensional approach. Delighted you could be with us. Well, Democrats bellow that Trump is going in the wrong direction, even as their own 25% approval rating proves that they're about as lost as Biden was in that rainforest. Shouldn't they perhaps get a compass before demanding that we follow them? Also, the latest Rasmussen poll numbers show the voters have a universal disdain for legacy media's choking left-wing bias. Can the press perhaps relearn objective reporting? Also, the Supreme Court shall review the practice of district judges issuing nationwide injunctions beyond their own jurisdictions. Will Trump use his constitutional check if the judiciary tries to usurp the executive's separated powers in the faux name of exercising its own? Now, they're going to be deciding this at the same time they look at birthright citizenship, which is, if you will, it's almost like an ancillary issue compared to this. It's a big deal. I don't want to downplay it. There's a serious argument that has to happen. But what really matters is, should a individual district court, one of 677, you know, we have 94 district courts in actual allocated district power, but we have still, individually speaking, we have 677 individual district court judges. And should any one of them be allowed to essentially issue nationwide injunctions, effectively impacting the legal question before them in a way that has universal influence? Shouldn't they be only deciding the case in front of them and have it affect the geography over which they're presiding? What gives them the right to essentially adjudicate a decision, even if it's in a developmental mode, in a fashion that impacts jurisdictions beyond his or her own? They are effectively supplanting the will of the electorate by doing this. They are gutting the separated prerogatives of another branch. And the president really has the prerogative to say no. Now, Trump is going through the maneuvers of the normal appellate process. But it's really kind of silly in my estimation, because the president should not need permission from the court to exercise his own separated powers, especially when they are clearly defined allocated powers. I mean, this is hypothetically the same as a district court saying to Trump, well, these people suing you don't like who you're trying to nominate as the next Supreme Court justice, so I'm going to pass an injunction saying you can't do this. I mean, people see how nonsensical that would be. Well, that's what's happening right now, just with other issues, but issues that are still unequivocally allocated to the powers of the presidency. These individual judges passing national injunctions or nationwide injunctions are not doing the right thing. And no less than liberal Supreme Court Justice Elena Kagan has remarked on this. She's not at all happy with this either. And good honor for coming out against this. Let's hear from her right now. Clip 9, James, if you please.
In recent years, some district courts have issued nationwide injunctions. And this happened in the Trump administration, and it has also happened in the Biden administration. So this has no political tilt to it. But some district courts have very quickly issued nationwide injunctions to stop a policy in its tracks, that, you know, something that the president and or Congress has determined to be the national policy. And it just, one district court stops it. And then you combine that with the ability of people to forum shop, to go to a particular district court where they think that that will be the result. And you look at something like that and you think, that can't be right, that one district court in the Trump years, people used to go to the Northern District of California. And in the Biden years, they go to Texas. And it just can't be right that one district judge can stop a nationwide policy in its tracks and leave it stopped for the years that it takes to go through normal process.
Really, what they're doing is they're short-circuiting the appellate system. All right? They're stopping it before a final ruling has been rendered, effectively supplanting the separated powers of the executive with their own prerogatives, thinking they can essentially violate the Constitution simply because they're doing so under the trappings of officialdom. It doesn't work that way. This is a very, very big deal. This matters. This matters hugely. And we have got to stay on this. We must stay on this. Because again, as I was saying before, yeah, the Supreme Court has final ruling over the constitutionality of a given argument. However, when, you know, when assessing whether it has possibly encroached upon another branch's authority, well, it provably does not have final say. And the president's ability to check this behavior is born out of the fact that the founders of our Constitution, the founding fathers, deliberately ensured that the judiciary would never be permitted to enforce its own rulings. Never. Now, again, judicial review makes sense. It really does. This is born out of Marbury versus Madison, 1803. The judiciary correctly clarified its branch's authority for judicial review. In other words, its power to interpret when a conflict is judicially reviewable and whether challenged laws pass constitutional muster. But again, the right to interpret the Constitution has never been a license to unilaterally amend it. That's an Article 5 function. And only a constitutional amendment could allow a court to absorb another branch's allocated authorities. So yeah, again, judicial review makes sense. Because let's face it, there's plenty of times when the Constitution simply does not have the corresponding language to deal with a particular challenge and focus. So we accept the court's aggregate determinations over these conflicts, fine. But when the Constitution does provide direct wording, and our judiciary disregards its instructions on point, well, that's when the Article 3 community has committed a hostile act against its own citizenry and must be met with the same leveraged check it routinely applies to the other two branches. These guys got to remember something. They're part of a co-equal branch, not a superior one. So to be unambiguously clear, not even the Supreme Court can credibly rule that the Constitution is in opposition to that which its text explicitly permits. It also can't rule that the Constitution is in support of that which its text explicitly forbids. Again, unless language is no longer tethered to the meanings of the words that comprise it. Now people will immediately shout, what about the appellate process? It should go through the appellate process. Well, yeah, use it. But the executive checking the judiciary in real time remains a documented failsafe. You don't like what he's done? Impeach him. Maybe it'll go to the Senate. And they'll go ahead and try him. And the moment they can't reach the two-thirds votes necessary to stop him or expel him, that means by default, Trump will have won the constitutional separation of powers argument. And the judiciary won't be able to do jack all about it, and it will have been constitutionally solved. You're listening to The Alan Nathan Show.
So Zuzu is the story of an adorable hermit crab that actually mistakes a piece of plastic for its shell. There's a short film on joinzuzu.com that is this extraordinary short film about Zuzu's story, but also there's a petition online where people can go and easily, in just moments, sign this petition to advocate for federal EPR legislation. This is so important because this allows us to create a national strategy of collective action to scale up a solution to fix the recycling problem in this country. So I partnered with S.E. Johnson on the Zuzu movement because S.E. Johnson is one of those rare companies that is out at the forefront of this issue and pushing to recognize that companies have a responsibility to play in the system. It's not just about consumers recycling. Companies and the products that they create need to be recyclable. They need to take responsibility for the life cycle of those products, and that's what S.E. Johnson is doing. And for more information, go to joinzuzu.com and sign the petition.
The fan favorite series Leverage Redemption returns for its third season April 17th on Prime Video. The show follows a team of reformed criminals who prove sometimes it's good to be bad as they use their less than legal skills to help those in need fight back against the rich and powerful. In season 3, the team pits themselves against a power broker stealing the town's clean water, a pool hustler with a side business in international extortion, and a corrupt mayor who's the judge and jury of his small town, all while dodging a plan of vengeance from a past enemy. But no matter what, when someone needs help, they provide the leverage. Elise Shannon plays Brianna Casey, a brilliant engineer and hacker.
Audiences will love this new season. It's filled with big surprises, major action, lots of humor, and as always, a lot of heart. My character, Brianna, is still learning about the world of cons, but she brings her own spin to everything. Snarky humor, it's high tech, and she helps the team stop some truly awful people.
Don't miss Leverage Redemption, April 17th on Prime Video.
Hi, it's Practical Polly's radio show. If you're just figuring out that healthier cooking oils are better than solid fats, you may be asking, now what am I going to do with all these tubs of lard? Ever had one of those moments when your favorite skinny jeans feel too tightly tailored? Generously apply lard to your hips and thighs and those fancy pants will slide on like a dream. Or here's a family-friendly idea. How about making your yard into a lard fun park? Frost your driveway with a nice thick coating and give those kiddos a downhill thrill no matter what time of year. Having a bad hair day? Yep. A little lump of lard can tame your flyaways in a jiffy. So there's no need for that lard to go to waste or to your waste. But get your best heart-healthy trade-up with healthier oils, like canola, olive, or other vegetable oils, which can actually lower your chances for heart disease. Now that's a tip worth keeping for life. Learn more at heart.org/facethefats. Canola Info is the national supporter of the American Heart Association's Face the Fats campaign.
Steven.
Who said that?
Me, down here.
What are you, a yellow booger?
I'm a banana slug, Steven.
Well, what are you doing in my room?
I'm your sense of adventure. Don't you remember me? Don't you know that we miss you?
Miss me? Who misses me?
You know, all your friends in the forest. The trees, the pond, that little fort that you made out of branches. We all miss you.
Mom took me to the forest last year.
I'm a slug, Steven. It took me a long time to get here.
Oh, I guess that makes sense.
The forest is not that far away. Have an adventure today. I'm sure your mom would take you.
You're right. I should get out. I want to have fun. Play in puddles, catch frogs, and climb trees. Hey, Mom!
Yeah, hon?
Steven! What is that in your hand?
It's my sense of adventure, Mom. It's telling me we need to get out of the house and have some fun in nature today.
Come to the forest where the more adventurous you lives. Check out discovertheforest.org for cool places nearby. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
No word in the English language is less convincing than probably.
Are you sure we should get matching tattoos on our first date?
Sure. We'll probably stay together.
Probably?
It's been 23 minutes since I ate. I can probably swim.
You should wait 30 minutes.
Okay, don't tell me what to do. Cannonball!
Cramp! Oh, I have a cramp.
I can probably hit the green from here.
Probably.
Can I get a mulligan?
Ready to go?
Hey, are you sure you're okay to drive?
Yeah, I'm pretty sober. Yeah, I'm probably okay.
Probably okay isn't okay, especially when it comes to drinking and driving. If you're drinking, call a cab, a car, or a friend. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Recent years, some district courts have issued nationwide injunctions, and this happened in the Trump administration, and it has also happened in the Biden administration. So this has no political tilt to it. But some district courts have very quickly issued nationwide injunctions to stop a policy in its tracks, that, you know, something that the president and or Congress has determined to be the national policy. And it just one district court stops it. And then you combine that with the ability of people to forum shop, to go to a particular district court where they think that that will be the result. And you look at something like that and you think, that can't be right, that one district court in the Trump years, people used to go to the Northern District of California. And in the Biden years, they go to Texas. And it just can't be right that one district judge can stop a nationwide policy in its tracks and leave it stopped for the years that it takes to go through normal process.
Welcome back, everybody. Welcome back. Every year is Alan Nathan, the militant moderate. Once again, this is The Oasis for those who have an aversion to the left, right, black, white, two-dimensional approach. Yes, I know I've played that clip a couple of times, but I think it's imperative that we hear it. That was liberal Supreme Court Justice Elena Kagan addressing the issue of these really out-of-bounds nationwide injunctions, which appear to violate the Constitution on point as a matter of language. You have any one of 677 judges believing they have the right to supplant the will of the electorate with their own preferences simply because they get to do so under the trappings of officialdom. No, you don't get to violate the Constitution on point just because you're doing so under the trappings of officialdom. And Elena Kagan, liberal justice that she is, addressed this issue in September of 2022. She was giving an address at the Northwestern Pritzker School of Law, and she pointed out that district judges should not be able to issue nationwide injunctions to stop policies from the president or Congress from being implemented nationwide, and that it just can't be right that people can judge shop to find the result they want to stop a nationwide policy for the years it would take for the case to clear the courts. You are essentially disconnecting the will of the people from their will being realized. And yes, that's why the president does indeed have, although few people understand its existence, but he does have the ability to disregard what a rogue court does when such an event happens. He does have that power. Now, he's not a king, so he would also face a check against becoming a tyrannical entity. And, you know, the Congress can find that either the president is right about a judge's rogue conduct and let his rejection pass with no House impeachment or no Senate expulsion trial, or the House can find that he is indeed the rogue actor and impeach him and send the case to the Senate. But, as I mentioned before, if it fails to reach the two-thirds vote required to trigger that expulsion, then the president will have won the constitutional argument in focus, and it will have been realized through the highest legal process in the land, and his repulsion of that alleged judicial overreach shall stand. Regardless of all the sophisticated objections lawyers and judges may wish to spew over its supposed immorality and violation of norms, doesn't matter. The check exists nonetheless. This is why the founders ensured that the judiciary would never be permitted to implement its own rulings. It can't. Because they knew that once the judiciary could actually enforce its own rulings, it would be ripe for tyranny. And just as no person can be a judge in his own trial, guess what? The judiciary doesn't get to be the final adjudicator in a battle in which they are one of the two litigants concerning separation of powers. That's why this check exists for the president. Because they cannot enforce their own rulings and rely upon him to do it, he can, if he finds that they have gone rogue, refuse to do it. That's his check. That check is inherently available by virtue of the limitation of the Supreme Court. So if it was really against the law to not listen to the aggregate judiciary's lawlessness, there would not exist this check. And again, there's a check on the check. Yet you have to remember, each branch has certain absolute powers beyond the reach of the other two. And the reason is to ensure that each may leverage against the other the checks and balances and reciprocal checks and balances that are required to maintain and protect their respective allocated authorities. So this is a big deal that's coming up. Anyway, without further ado, let me introduce sole friend of the show, Ann Vandersteel, co-founder of the American Made Foundation. She was the host of Steel Truth TM and is considered a thought leader and trailblazer in new media. She's also a former co-chair of the Zelenko Foundation and former president and co-host on Your Voice America. Ann, good to have you back. How are you today?
Oh, it's great to be back. Thank you. Listen, really serious information you're delivering and the commentary on this, you're spot on. We have gone so far off the rails when it comes to these, I call them bar card mafias in black robes. I mean, the level of tyranny they're inflicting on the people, on the executive branch, legislating from the bench, making up rules as they go along, ignoring their own statutory codes and laws that they're supposed to follow. It's outrageous what they're putting Americans through right now. And again, I do believe that this is directly a descendant on the last 50 years of lawlessness. But as you look at everything through the lens of how did we get here? Well, we got here mostly because people don't understand what our responsibility is when it comes to a Republican form of government. And I don't mean Republican Party. I mean a true republic. And people don't understand that we have inherent duties as we the people being the government, God creating man, man creating government, and man creating corporations. And at the moment right now, we have the tail wagging the dog, meaning we have the corporate global masters wagging the tail of the Americans, and they're using the government who has
Here's some good news for you. There's a lot of folks out there who, even if they're atheists or agnostic or deist like I am, where I believe in God but not through any formal religion, I'm very much like Thomas Jefferson was, deist. Even people who, let's say, have no belief that, you know, God put us on this earth, they sure as hell do believe in the Constitution as an originalist. And they're against this living document theory by the left because, I mean, once you have standards that are predicated on seemingly never-ending variables, you cease to have standards. You have to have a point of finality. So a lot of people believe that all of us have to understand the difference between a raw democracy and a constitutional republic. In a pure democracy, 51% of the people can take away 100% of your rights. Screw that.
But with
a constitutional republic, all of your individual rights are always protected, regardless of what bozo gets elected. You know, you had these, and that's why we have to get away from the living document theory, because by that measure, all of a sudden, our protections under the Bill of Rights are less guaranteed simply because of the age of their text.
That's right.
I don't know about you, but I think most Americans believe that our individual rights should be timeless, not time-limited, which is what they become once you go with the living document theory. And trust me, there's a lot of people who don't believe in God but believe in the Constitution in its original intent, as do you and I, because you can't have all of our rights become more and more vulnerable simply because of the age of the document. That's a load of crap. If you want to change that document, you do it through the amendment process. One thing I want to talk about as it relates to the president's prerogatives does have to do with USAID. Now, we understand that some Republicans are going to refuse to cut the funding for USAID. But even if that's the case, that doesn't mean they can interfere with the president having found that certain expenditures were unlawfully doled out. Now, if you're talking about dollars that were already committed, no matter how stupid the agenda, I guess maybe Trump could be dialed back in that regard. But when it comes to funds that are discretionary, you know, wherein the people in AID get to determine it, well, that means they're subordinate to their boss, who is appointed by the president, and then all of a sudden it still defaults to the president's perspective over how these funds should be spent when looking at those dollars that are under the discretionary category. And I don't see how that changes, no matter how many people try to twist the words. Your take?
Yeah, well, look, Senate Republicans, first of all, refusing to cut funding to USAID, National Public Radio, and the public broadcasting system. That, as you just said, is a direct betrayal, not just of President Trump and the American movement of call it MAGA, call it whatever, but of the people. But it's really, excuse me, of the MAGA movement, but it is directly an affront to the American people. And we're tired of footing the bill for institutions that undermine our values, they ignoring our voice, weaponizing taxpayer dollars against us. This isn't fiscal conservatism, it's total complicity. And I hear
really?
We've got music, so I'll sit by. Yeah, I've got more to say, but I'll wait till we come back from commercial.
Sounds good. Please stick around, folks. You're listening to The Alan Nathan Show right here on the Main Street Radio Network. Going to be right back.
A new national survey reveals a surprising gap between what Americans believe about dental care and what they actually do. Many say they want to keep their natural teeth for life, but their habits often don't match that goal. Dr. Stephen Katz, president of the American Association of Endodontists, explains.
Most adults say they care about keeping their natural teeth, and nearly 9 in 10 believe flossing is important. But almost 60% don't floss daily, and more than 2 in 5 wait to see a dentist until they're already in pain. These delays can lead to serious dental problems.
Tooth pain doesn't have to mean tooth loss. When problems do arise, there's hope and help from a dental specialist known as an endodontist to help save your natural teeth.
That's correct. Endodontists are specialists in saving natural teeth through root canal therapy. With the right care, even a tooth that hurts or is infected can frequently be saved. But the key is acting early. Don't wait for pain.
Learn more at findmyendodontist.com. A new AARP fraud report highlights the need for better cybersecurity habits. Kathy Stokes is the director of fraud prevention programs with AARP's Fraud Watch Network.
Fraud is becoming increasingly sophisticated, yet many Americans may still be unaware of habits that can decrease their risk. Now, millions of adults have downloaded unverified apps, or they've taken social media quizzes from questionable sources, and millions have yet to enable multi-factor authentication, which is an easy step that offers additional protection for online accounts.
The good news is that protecting yourself doesn't require a tech background.
Simple steps like updating your passwords, using a VPN on public Wi-Fi, and turning on security features can help keep your information safe.
For more on how to protect yourself from the latest scams, visit aarp.org/fraudwatchnetwork. That's aarp.org/fraudwatchnetwork.
You know that feeling? Like every door is closing and you just can't see a way out? Being unemployed, underemployed, or just out of school feels a lot like that. But when you find the right tools, suddenly everything just clicks. Getting on that path may be easier than you think. A good place to start? Go to findsomethingnew.org. At findsomethingnew.org, you have access to resources that help develop new skills. Skills that will position you for careers in today's growing industries. From healthcare and manufacturing to cybersecurity and alternative energy. Plus, you can take advantage of online courses, certification programs, apprenticeships, and more. So you can take yourself from unemployed and uncertain to empowered and prepared for what's next. Find your path to a new career today. Visit findsomethingnew.org. A message from the Ad Council.
Are you excited about being a new grandmother?
Of course I am. A little intimidated, too.
Why?
Taking care of a baby today is so different than when I had you.
But, Mom, you did great with me.
Thanks, son. But I put you on your stomach to sleep.
Right. But now we know that babies should always be placed on their backs to sleep, for naps and at night, to reduce the risk of sudden infant death syndrome, or SIDS.
Hmm. You also slept with blankets and toys in your crib.
True. But now we know to keep everything out of the crib except for my sweet baby girl. No blankets, pillows, or other soft or loose items.
Daddy's going to teach Nana all the ways to keep you safe while you sleep. Yes, he is. Yes, he is.
For more tips on safe sleep for babies, visit safetosleep.nichd.nih.gov. That's safetosleep.nichd.nich.gov. Sponsored by the Eunice Kennedy Shriver National Institute of Child Health and Human Development.
I'm Ben Affleck, and I want to thank you for joining me and supporting Paralyzed Veterans of America. Our vets need you.
I'm a quadriplegic. I'm definitely at risk with my diminished lung capacity.
I have MS. I'm in a wheelchair, and I can't leave the house because I have a compromised immune system.
I'm very concerned about, would there be a bed for me? Would there be a ventilator for me? Would I be able to survive something?
It's just heavy. You know, it's a heavy moment. This is a war. This really is.
Our veterans fought for us. Let's fight for them.
I am so grateful for the PVA. They're making sure that we have all of the food and supplies that we need right now.
We all got to help each other right now. We can't get through this by ourselves.
It's with profound gratitude that you're going to be saving our lives.
To find out how you can help, please go to helppva.org. That's H-E-L-P-P-V-A.org.
not a media failure. This is a failure of the Democratic Party. And I just sort of the virtue signaling that some people have done to try to say that the media missed this story. They didn't miss this story. I just refuse to accept this stupid premise, because it's a right-wing manufactured right-wing premise in order to stain the media.
The only thing I can chalk it up to is this, whatever you want to call it, this fear that some members of the media had sometimes that they would be perceived as helping Trump if they somehow diminished Biden, right? That it was some sort of zero-sum game. Mm-hmm. And I think this has been the fundamental mistake that many members of the traditional press have done.
Yeah, that was same guy, different talking point. I want to recast this. This is Ever Yours, Alan Nathan, the militant moderate. Once again, this is The Oasis for those who have an aversion to the left, right, black, white, two-dimensional approach. You're listening to NBC, MSNBC anchor Chuck Todd. Now, the first clip was on April 28th, and he rejects the idea that the media gave no coverage to Joe Biden's mental decline. He's ticked off at the right wing for apparently having a very effective talking point, when in fact the grounds for said talking point were most assuredly and unambiguously provided by the left, because they gave us their behavior as the grounds for said talking point for anybody who's being critical. And I'm a centrist, nothing to do with the Republicans, but even I can see, yeah, you guys in the press covered up for this guy. And he said, oh, I just can't blame the media. And yet, then you hear in that second clip, 18 days earlier, in which Chuck Todd actually acknowledged how the media had a role in not bringing forth Biden's mental deficiencies. I want you to hear these two clips one more time. First, you're going to hear Chuck Todd's comparatively more recent denial of that which he had earlier recognized himself in the clip you'll hear following it. Here's both clips. Overall, clip 13, James, if you please.
This is not a media failure. This is a failure of the Democratic Party. And I just sort of the virtue signaling that some people have done to try to say that the media missed this story. They didn't miss this story. I just refuse to accept this stupid premise, because it's a right-wing manufactured right-wing premise in order to stain the media.
The only thing I can chalk it up to is this, whatever you want to call it, this fear that some members of the media had sometimes that they would be perceived as helping Trump if they somehow diminished Biden, right? That it was some sort of zero-sum game. Mm-hmm. And I think this has been the fundamental mistake that many members of the traditional press have done.
So in his earlier statement, he shows that he's the embodiment of the very thing he then subsequently denies. It's too hilarious. But the flip-floppery of the Democrats is just astonishing. And I say this as one who was a Democrat. I'm an aggressive centrist. I began this show as a centrist Democrat. Now in its 27th year of national syndication, I haven't turned to the Republicans, but I now do despise my former party while still finding myself in great disagreement with the Republicans in a whole host of issues whenever they unmoor themselves from the very thing they essentially propagate or be. When they begin to embody the very thing they're ostensibly criticizing. I don't like when either side does it. I just find the left is disproportionately these days guilty of that nuttery. I'll give an example. Senator Amy Klobuchar. She was asked recently, hey, would it have been a good idea for Joe Biden to have stepped out of the race? We're going to get to my illustrious guest in just a second. And she says, oh, we're not part of the History Channel. We want to move on. Basically those words. In other words, I don't want to be held accountable for my own rhetoric in the past. But then you're going to hear her rhetoric in the past, where she was pointedly asked in real time, hey, is it probably a better idea if Biden maybe leaves and leaves for these reasons? You're going to hear multiple clips. The first one is the most recent one, May 25th. Oh, and by the way, before, when I was playing those clips of Chuck Todd, the first one was from CNN's Chris Chaliza. Podcast entitled Downside Up, and the next one was Uncensored with Piers Morgan. My apologies for not giving them props. Anyway, now we're going to hear the flip-floppery of Senator Amy Klobuchar, Democrat out of the great state of Minnesota. Clip 12, if you please.
Would the party have had a better chance of winning in 2024 had President Biden dropped out sooner?
You know, everything we look at in a rearview mirror after you lose an election, yes, we would have been served better by a primary. But we are where we are. We're not on the History Channel right now.
You know,
Concerns have been growing for quite some time within your party about President Biden's ability to win a second term. The latest person to express this, Ezra Klein of the New York Times, who said this week, quote, he is not up for this. Senator, what is your reaction to that stark assessment?
My reaction is, as someone who ran against Joe Biden, as someone who has spent significant amount of time with Joe Biden, that he is up for this job. And I was with the president for over an hour and talked about so many things, domestic, international. He was focused. His recall was good.
Do you think it's time to pass the torch?
Again, I'm a believer in President Biden.
Yeah, so I'm sorry, Senator Klobuchar, but you don't get to use replacement measures simply because you can't satisfy the primary one. All right, somebody holding you accountable for where you were wrong is not excusable just because when you were wrong, it was in the past. By that measure, nobody ever has to be held accountable for anything ever again. Give me a break. The only legitimate measure of any dialogue or debate is the one born out of the original dispute, first exposing the conflict, otherwise known as the rub. And the degree to which douchebags like you can't uphold your half of the original rub is the extent to which you're showing that you have a weak-ass argument. So in the immortal words of the late, great Richard Pryor, have a Coke and a smile and shut the F up. Anyway, without further ado, we have assisting in the opining and analyzing, sticking around, and we appreciate that. Ann Vandersteel, co-founder of American Made Foundation. Again, she was host of Steel Truth TM, and is considered a thought leader and trailblazer in new media. She's also a former co-chair of the Zelenko Foundation and former president and co-host on Your Voice America. Ann Vandersteel, once again, thanks so much for joining us. It does appear that Democrats have a lot of advice to dish out, telling about how Trump has got us going in the wrong direction, even though they're only at a 25% approval rating, which kind of shows that they're perhaps about as lost as Biden was in that rainforest, or am I being too strident?
No, you're not being too strident at all. I think you're spot on. I mean, the sheer gall, unmitigated gall of these so-called journalists that really are the fourth branch of government for the Democrat machine, you know, fail to recognize that the Hunter Biden laptop story was real. It is real. The classified documents back in early 23 were just where they were discovered at President Biden's former office and residence.
Right.
Critics, you know, they are sitting there ignoring that story. Cognitive health concerns, ignoring that story. Hillary Clinton email controversies, Clinton fountain donations. How about the Benghazi attack? We still aren't done with that. And Whitewater, I mean, this stuff goes back decades.
It really does. And I'm so sorry I held you on a little longer than I meant to before getting to you. I got lost in the myriad of examples of the Democrats' bad faith behavior these days. So I look forward to having you back real soon and, of course, having you on for a longer period as well. Ann Vandersteel, everybody, thanks so much again, Ann. We appreciate it. Folks, you're listening to The Alan Nathan Show right here on the Main Street Radio Network.
The opinions you hear on the Main Street Radio Network are those of the host, callers, and guests, and not necessarily those of the station, Main Street Radio Network, its management, or advertisers. The information on the Main Street Radio Network does not constitute a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or securities. So please, consult a professional before investing. If you have any questions or comments about Main Street Radio Network, contact us at 703-719-0433 or at our website, mainstreetradionetwork.com.